The material discussed and presented in this podcast is for general information only, and any reliance on such material is done at your own risk. This podcast should not be considered professional advice. Reference to any information, product, process, service, or organization does not constitute an endorsement or recommendation by PROS. Views expressed by guests are their own, and their appearance on the podcast does not imply an endorsement by PROS of them or any entity they represent. Views expressed by PROS employees are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views, standards, or policies of PROS or any of its directors, officers, employees, or shareholders.
Welcome to Interface, a podcast where we connect technology and culture through conversation. Interface is brought to you by Empower at PROS. Empower is dedicated to attracting, developing, and retaining Black talent at PROS. PROS helps people and companies outperform by enabling smarter selling in the digital economy. I'm your host, Jennifer Plummer, and today I'm joined with Matthew Negron. And sadly, well, not sadly, Sierra's on spring break, so she's not joining us today. So it's just two hosts today. But today our guest is Dana Morrow-Branch, Senior Vice President, AI Platform Risk Management at Bank of America. She brings over two decades of experience in technology, from software development to AI project management, characterized by her passion for turning ideas and initiatives into reality, with a commitment to excellence. Renowned for her expertise in executing complex projects, Dana balances her professional life with being a devoted homeschooler, mother, volunteer, lifelong learner, and a proactive advocate for diversity and inclusion, using her influence to foster more inclusive tech environments. An enthusiast for hiking, cooking, and reading, she's also authoring a book that shares her journey as a Black woman in tech, merging personal stories with actionable insights and strategy for empowerment and change. Welcome to the podcast, Dana.
Thank you for
excited
to be here.
So we always like to ask people, how did you get here? What was your journey to becoming a technologist?
Oh my gosh, that's a funny story. Actually, I was a kid who was quite bored in high school, and I think the only image of what I really knew professional career was watching the Cosby Show. I knew doctor from Dr. Huxtable, and I knew lawyer from Claire Huxtable. So I just knew I was going to be a lawyer. Until 1 month before I graduated high school, I had spent the past 6 months learning Microsoft DOS, and I was in the library. And what I didn't know was my quest for knowledge and curiosity actually led me to breaking into the state of Maryland's Board of Education database.
Yes. Okay.
And my librarian walked up to me and she was like, "What are you doing?" And I'm like, "Nothing." And she's like, "Oh, you're doing something." And I go, "No, I'm not doing anything." She says, "Yeah, I just received a phone call and you're in the Board of Education database." And I was like, "What? Me? I did what?" I seriously didn't know what I did. But by her reaction, I knew it was a big deal. And literally in that moment, I decided that I was going to not go do pre-law. I was going to go get a computer engineering degree. That's where I landed. I attended Illinois Institute of Technology in Chicago. And computer engineering didn't quite work out. I couldn't really figure out the binary numbers to get the elevator from the third floor to the 17th floor. So I ended up sort of changing my major after my sophomore year. But the good thing is I fast-tracked myself by taking classes over the summer and ended up graduating a semester ahead. So that worked out.
No regrets, huh? You've had a, seems like you've been building and building on that career. What did you do after you graduated? What was your first job?
Oh, my first job was super exciting. I had spent the last 4 years hanging out in Chicago with the hawk weather. I actually missed the first 2 weeks of class because coming from Maryland, we had like snow on the ground, like probably just about some snow, right? And they shut down the whole school's district, right? And getting into Chicago, it was like 24, 27 inches of snow. And I'm like, there's no way people are in class. And one day I came out my dorm room for lunch and I noticed kids walking through the door. So I stopped one of them and I'm like, hey, what are you doing? And he's like, coming from class. I said, oh my gosh, you guys go to class in that? And he was like, yeah, classes started 2 weeks ago. Well, lo and behold, I had some making up to do. But my first job out of college, I ended up in sunny California. It was December and I had on flip-flops and a tank top. But I credit that journey because it allowed me so much exposure and so much experience. One thing I like to share is that I actually got 6 promotions in 6 months. And I went from a software design engineer 1 to a software design engineer 7 in 6 months. So literally every month I was getting promoted to the next level. And so that fed the beast of curiosity that I was missing when I was in high school. College for me was a little bit of a stickler, like a shock factor, because while I was super smart with math and things of that sort, I just really didn't know what I was coming up against when I got to college. But I wish I was better prepared as a math student for the higher math concepts that feed into computer science topics. But I think, you know, that's probably the only regret I really have. But my career has been amazing. People trusted me. I ended up with a team where I kind of got the best of both worlds, meaning I was able to get software development and hardware development as my first job out of college. Most people either go in one or the other, so they don't really get the multidisciplinary and the inter perspective of them both. But I was actually programming hardware to software and programming software to hardware. So from there, I became even more curious in terms of the software development lifecycle. And that's what it enabled me to sort of explore, you know, the career option that I'm in today, which is a foundation of project management. Because I woke up one day and I was just kind of like, where are these requirements coming from? Where do they come from? So I kind of found an executive and he took I took a risk. Those were days where there were no guidelines on don't talk to the CEO, right? today, you better not go talk to the CEO without talking to your manager first. But these were the days where environments was open. I was at Silicon Valley, you know, we were in the tech boom age and, you know, people were just like very super friendly. Their titles didn't mean anything. It was just like, hey, get the work done and keep it moving. But I had the pleasure. His name is David Burnick. And I shout out to him and a young lady named Jennifer Sandoval, because while they taught me a lot, they also taught me to go after what it is that you want. Right. So mid-technology career, Dave Burnick had a 34-year career in tech. And he decided to retire and go be a professor at UC Santa Cruz. Mm-hmm. And then Jennifer Sandoval sort of had a desire to go get her master's degree and PhD degree in psychology. And she left her 20-something year career to go pursue a degree and a profession. And she actually has her own psychiatry practice today, right? So they taught me what I needed in my early days of my career, but they also taught me the language of pivot when it makes sense. And so it mm-hmm. made sense for me at a certain point in my career to pivot into the whole project program portfolio arena. And then mm-hmm. the doors of excitement just grew all over again.
What was the experience like going from Chicago to California? Like, were you recruited? Did you apply to a job? Did you just, after you got that, you just packed up and left, and then you're in this early career job and you're reaching out to executives. What is that like? I imagine that's daunting. And how do you like prep for those meetings? Are you just saying like, hey, I have this question, or can you walk me through it? Like, what's that balance between using their time effectively and then also, you know, you're trying to learn a bunch and you don't know where to start?
I'm going to going to tackle the second question first, because that's a very interesting question, right? I think me landing into a place and a space where everybody were either 30 years into their career, but they were also 30 years into their career working for the same company. So when I came along, I was the youngest person on the scene. I don't know if it was accredited to the fact that she was young and was just asking questions and we're just going to answer them, because no one prepped me. No one said, Dana, your first job out of college, ask questions. College doesn't teach you that. They teach you theory. They teach you mechanics. They think they teach you to think, but they don't teach you the skills that you need, the soft skills. And so me being a woman of faith, first and foremost, people are super important and I respect people no matter what. So my approach is always going to be in a way where I'm, you know, being representative of my spot in heaven, right? And so as a result of that, I approach people in a certain way, in a certain level of respect, because one day I hope they would have given that. And so I think the mastermind and the genius of what happened that moved me from software engineer one, design engineer one, to seven. And then within 18 months of graduating from college, I was a software developer manager. And I also had a QA team offshore in India of 125 QA engineers. So I'm fresh out of college, 2 years in the game, and this responsibility is being laid on me. So I sort of just, what we talk about today as Black women and Black men in technology, we talk about bringing your authentic self to work. And I think I was practicing that and I didn't even know what I was doing. Just being you, being curious, being intellectually sound, but most importantly, understanding that dealing with an audience of senior executives and their time is very valuable. What do you do with 5 minutes? I learned the art of what to do with 5 minutes. And 5 minutes became 15 minutes and 15 minutes became 30 minutes. And next thing I know, I was in rooms hours with people that I didn't think I would see or be at the table with until I was practically in my 40s, but except I was in my 40s, right? So that's how I would answer that part of the question. And then in terms of just the transition from Chicago, I actually was working for a bank in Chicago as well. I applied for an internship, got the job, rocked it out over the summer. For some reason, executive just must be in my blood because it was a project analyst role, sort of like help desk, you know, those were those entry level jobs. And my job was to take tickets from the help desk. But I was so good at what I did, they only gave me executive tickets. So think about all the executives at the bank. Whenever they had issues with their PC, Dana got the ticket. And so, you know, they would like leave me in the room in their offices and just say, hey, when you're finished, just send me a text message. So I learned executive behaviors by observing them. And yeah. So I was set to just hang out in Chicago, except there's a journey we don't have time for on this podcast. Maybe I can come back another day for that. But National Society of Black Engineers was having a conference in Charlotte that year, May of 2000. And I fought tooth and nails to get there. Didn't have no money, but I made it. Long story short, I got my first job out of college from the NSEB, National Society of Black Engineers Conference. And I think that's a great start for a lot of Black technologists. Black graduates who are looking to step their first foot in the door for technology careers. And so it just turned out amazing for me. The weather was great. Did I mention the weather already? Oh, the weather was so nice. By the way, they fully paid for me to come out and tour the area. And what I thought was going to be an interview, a job interview, I had the job already. So people were like, oh, you play basketball and oh, you're going to love it here. Where are the interview questions? But I had the job already.
That's great.
Discover how PROS Enterprise AI can help you drive profitable growth at Outperform 2024. held at the Hyatt Regency Grand Cypress in Orlando, Florida, May 20th through 22nd, 2024. Hear from keynote speakers Dr. Michael Wu, Chief AI Strategist at PROS, and Andres Reiner, PROS President and CEO. Register today at www.pros.com/outperform.
So today you're a Senior Vice President of AI Platform Risk Management. So my question is also a two-part question. What is a Senior Vice President? And then specifically for AI Platform Risk Management, what does that mean?
Senior Vice President is just that. It's a title. But I think most importantly, the title is representative of how peers see you. Are you operating in company culture, company ethics? Are you being a team player? Are you having executive presence? Do you know how to communicate in written and verbal, right? And do you know how to manage people? I think people, process, and then the technology is sometimes we miss the ordering of that and we just focus on the technology piece. But if you put up front the people and the process, I think that's what SVP means. It's more than just SVP on the book. It says you have accomplished and achieved things that's worth the recognition. But ultimately, SVP is Senior Vice President. Different companies have different titles. My company just so happened to have Senior Vice President, which is equivalent to a director role. If you know, people have director and managing director, you could sort of look at it that way. Before you move into, it's like the precursor to moving into that C-suite range, right? So we talk chief this and chief. So I appreciate the title because it shows the long journey and it's time to pay it forward is what it is. And then your second question is around the job genre, right? Like,
yeah.
I don't think you could go to college and say, hey, I want to major in AI model development risk management, right? It is a curated experience. So I'm a very broad advocate of if the job doesn't fit, you create the fit. And so I have a background in software development, engineering practices, all of those great things. I shifted into project management. And AI model management is just the intersection of both all of those disciplines. It's a hybrid of all of the roles that I've played thus far in my career, inclusive of business analysis, change management, risk management, release management, quality assurance. Like when you think about the of the software development lifecycle, the SDLC, it encompasses a whole army to get software out in production. And to be able to have played pretty much every role on the gamut, the question then becomes, what defines you in your second life of your career? Most people leave their companies and find something totally different. Most people start businesses and some people decide to take the nonprofit route. For me, I feel like my company is a great place to work, so I'm not going anywhere. But I felt like the job descriptions didn't encompass all that I wanted to be. And so I started navigating as a product owner, product manager role. I started navigating something new that people wasn't even giving thought to. And that is, we're developing in an artificial intelligence universe. Who is looking out for the risk associated with AI gone? So I said, nobody's looking at it. I'm up for the challenge. So my development team was doing BAU development on the platform. And we talk about the platform. We're talking about the very thing that enables artificial intelligence to do what it does. Right. So we're talking about the brains behind what we call artificial intelligence. And so I kind of stuck to the platform. I stuck with that team and I'm like, hey, I don't want to do the nice, shiny objects in front of customers. I want to be behind the scenes, navigating the deep, rich neural network, deep learning, the machine learning aspect of what it is that we were doing. And it ultimately paid off because I was looking at something nobody else was looking at. I was able to demonstrate value very quickly. And then over time, obviously AI became a thing for everybody, even the federal government. I think Biden, put some legislature in this year or last year to sort of put eyes on AI as, as a country, right? So that level of leadership, visibility, and foresight to have that 7-8 years ago, it just didn't exist, right? We do risk management from an application perspective, but no one thinks about the other elements that come with AI in terms of bias and fairness. And we're talking about turning over things that humans traditionally do to a machine to predict intents of customers and then provide right, accurate responses. Don't show bias, regardless of if you're, your race, your gender, your ethnicity, your pronouns that you use. That shouldn't matter. You ask the AI a question, we all should get the same answer to the same question. And if the question is varied because you grew up in the South Side of Chicago versus someone growing up on the Pebble Beach golf course, right? Like, it doesn't matter what, what language you use or vernacular, you should still be able to get the answer. And that's something to, keep an eye out on. But, AI model risk, the title sounds fancy, but it's just a specialty in, identifying, assessing, and mitigating risk on behalf of the company and its client.
Fantastic. What advice would you give to, youngsters, young adults that are, looking to career in technologies today? The atmosphere or the environment's a little different than when we came out of school. So is there anything that you would advise now that maybe you wouldn't have advised someone 10 years ago?
That's a really good question, because for someone that's interested in a role that centralizes in technology, I would say you're making a great career choice. You're making a career choice that's sustainable. The one thing that I didn't know back then that I wish I knew was to be thinking about strategy. So we get jobs and we focus on the job. It's a task. They tell us the description. They tell us what they're expecting from us. But anything outside of that role, people really try to stick to their role. They try not to cross the lane. And I did that very well, but I did it almost in secret. It was like a secret that I was doing that, right? Nobody knew that I was doing it. It was like my little kept secret. Today, I tell people that's not a secret. Go do it. Anybody that I mentor, anybody that I coach, I say know your job and know everybody else's job around you. Don't worry about getting 5 paychecks. It doesn't matter. The experience, the knowledge, the value that you're going to contribute by understanding what the person to the left, the right, behind you, and in front of you are doing, you're basically putting yourself in a position to be this, what I call a, they say be a jack of all, what is it? Jack of all trades and a master of none. My challenge to myself was to be a jack of all trades and an expert at all of them. So Today, you can put me in a business analyst role, I got you. You can put me in a project management role, I got you. Now, the only thing I don't do is programming. So I don't do development anymore, but I am learning Python right now because I have a need at the job. And so I find that to be quite interesting for me to do that on the side. But ultimately, just think about the diverse workforce that we're in, the disruptions that are happening. Sitting in one job function and one job role, you could be easily disrupted tomorrow. I mean, AI is a thing and it's nothing to fear. It's something people need to start embracing, because if it's going to take someone 5 days to do calculations of some number crunching and the AI can have it done in 1 minute, which one do you think the company is going to go with?
Yeah, you got to learn the new rules of the game.
Exactly. Yeah. It's new rules of the game. So what got you here, and that's what I tell myself, what got me here isn't going to get me there. And so when I'm mentoring and I'm coaching, what got you here is what got you here. it's almost like you got to shed the skin of what got you here, except the skills. I tell people, don't drop what got you here. Retain the skills and continue to acquire skills. So that's one of the major things that I would tell people. In addition, I mean, like I mentioned, AI is here. So build a strong foundation in machine learning, data science, whatever that looks like to you, right? A solid foundation is going to help you to identify potential job roles for the future. I think another thing that people don't necessarily pay attention to is project management skills, right? So having strong organizational project management skills is going to help you oversee the entire life cycle of any project, any work that you're delivering for production. And it's beneficial because we talk about being Scrum certified, Agile certified, right? But what does that really mean if you're not stepping back to look at the picture of what's really happening and moving into that strategic mindset that I talked about earlier, right? That's what I wish I had more of, you know, through those years, is that strategic mindset. I'm working on that now, but definitely something that I wish I had access to. And the last thing I would point out is around a mindset of continuous learning. I didn't get where I am today because I took my job as a software design engineer and said, that's all I'm going to do is code. I said, no, where's my code going when I finish with it? What are you doing? Mm-hmm. Oh, so you're configuring it and merging it with someone else's code. Okay, well, what happens if you get errors? Oh, I send it back to the person where the errors are coming from. So you don't look to find out what the error is to be able to add value when you turn around and say, hey, your code broke. They said, no. I said, wow, that sounds like a problem. So I was actually coaching and mentoring adults who were already 20 years into their career, just with my little curiosity of why you're not doing something, right? And when they package up the software, what's happening next, right? So I just kept going and going. So have that that mindset, because things are rapidly evolving. Whether you're a cashier at Walmart, notice the new Walmarts, right? Everything is about a machine. Walk up, scan your own products, bag your own products, pay, walk out the door. They're not staffing registered, right? They're staffing for oversight of machines. So that's where I tell people to be giving thought. Where is the human in the loop while the machine is creating efficiencies and productivity? That's where the job.
At what point did you wake up and you decided you wanted to be a senior vice president? And if you could go back early in your career, you had a first job, you got several promotions very quickly. If you go back and you say, hey, this is the path to get to an SVP, what would you say?
Don't listen. I say that because careers aren't built on chasing titles. Careers are built on demonstrating value and a need for you in a room. And as a byproduct of you being in the room, someone is paying attention and someone's going to be keeping an eye out for your next. And your next just so happens to be the very breakthrough of a glass ceiling that you need to gain the exposure, the knowledge, the next level acumen, especially when it comes to business or tech acumen, right? That's where the value is. So I never set out to say that I want to be a senior vice president. To tell you the truth, I'm not even setting out beyond the senior vice president. I'm just going to do what I do with high excellence and keep learning, keep growing, keep demonstrating value, keep demonstrating excellence at the table and demonstrating that I'm a thought leader and I can contribute to the conversation. And one day I look up, somebody may have an opportunity for me to be the next level up in the org. And I'm going to say, thank you.
That's a really good way to look at it is, hey, I need to be in the room. And so, you know, what does that mean for me to be in the room? And that's kind of how you people see your value.
You summarized that very well. It's about being in the room to learn. And you learn, fail fast, grow, and keep it moving.
Yeah, I totally relate to that. I think anytime I've heard people chasing the money or the title, it always seems like a very stationary target that once you get to it, you're already past it and you want more or something. Whereas the curiosity, the skills, the learning, that's all intrinsic, that it's okay if you can't get enough of that, because it is like, if you can't get enough of wanting to learn more, then you can only learn more and you have to continue to find that out. And I think the outcome of that is only positive.
Absolutely. Think about the experience that you're gaining. Even if you're, I used to call it a fly on the wall. If I could just be a fly on the wall, that's it. That's where you get the exposure. That's where you get people looking and like, oh, Dana's in the room. What can we get? Oh, let Dana do that. The moment you say, let Dana do that, it could be scribing notes for the meeting. But guess what? I have executives waiting on an email in their inbox every Friday from Dana summarizing the meeting, the action item. What are the next steps? And then people start to look at you like, oh, she's the source of record for next steps and who's who and how to navigate. And then you continue and grow from there. There's nothing more valuable than gaining practical experience, enhancing your communication, developing your network, right? Your network is your net worth, right? Mm-hmm. Who cares about a title?
So you mentioned that you're coming out of, you went to the National Society of Black Engineers Conference, NSBE, in Charlotte. And that's where it was that year, because it rotates, right, every year?
Yeah, that is correct.
That's kind of one way that you, or that's how you got into the first position you had. Based on your experience and that, you know, the experience that you had as a student coming into the workforce and as, you know, a person with the experience you have at Bank of America, what should companies do to increase the number of Black technologists?
I think we all have a role to play in our different roles and seats and platforms that we have. But if the companies from the top down don't believe that increasing talent, diverse talent throughout the company is for the benefit of the company. Okay. So the diversity of thought, the diversity of ideation, all of that requires you to have a mix of resources. So what can companies do in terms of their strategies to make sure that they are developing and implementing comprehensive and inclusive, sustainable program is to think about the communities that you serve. And I like that I work for a company who puts that up front, like we wear it as the Superman logo on the t-shirt, right? So I think it starts with things like outreach, education programs, establishing partnerships with historically Black colleges and universities, Native American, Latino, Hispanic, reaching the high schools, reaching community organizations that tap into those populations to create pathways. And when I talk about pathways, I actually sit on the regional board for a phenomenal nonprofit called NPower. And NPower out here in Texas, no different than the national platform, is to provide technical fundamentals to launch a career in tech. And I have watched for the past 3 years that I've served on this board, countless classes graduating with individuals who never thought that they could ever launch a career in tech. And we're talking about thinking about non-traditional ways, right? Investing in non-traditional ways to enhance STEM programs, so things like Girls Who Code, Black Girls Who Code, coding boot camps for adults. I have a dear friend that I met at Grace Hopper back in 2019, and we're friends to this day. She has a very traditional, non-traditional career path into coding. She basically self-taught herself to code. And then she went to a couple boot camps, and she started building up her resume, building up her portfolio, and she works for a company as a software developer. She doesn't have a four-year degree. So I think the four-year degree is great, but everybody can't make a four-year degree. So we have to be able to create programs that reach past four-year degrees and allow others an opportunity to get in. I think internship is a great opportunity to of an investment as well. When we think about having these opportunities provide meaningful ways to connect up knowledge with actual work on the ground. I mean, some people fear technology. And my daughter, I know I don't look like it, by the way, but I have a daughter who turns 22 this week. And she's like anti-technology. And I'm like, why? It's the future. Why would you not want to intersect the thing you love with technology? So if you like art, intersect art with tech. If you like singing, interconnect the two, you know? And so things like that, providing those internship opportunities so they can actually see what they're trying to be is super important. So I think those are key top of mind things for companies to make sure they invest in year over year. It's definitely a part of the next generational strategy to make sure we have a grown set of technologies to continue to take us into the future.
Great answer.
It's got to be our most comprehensive answer to date, I think. very, 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 it was great. Good job.
Thank you.
So now it's time for the heat check. The heat check is a segment where the Interface co-hosts share an interesting or hot topic happening in the technology space or Black culture. So I actually have two. So the first one is an article entitled "The Top Three Resume Mistakes Costing You the Job." So before I say what this article answered, any guesses as to what mistakes people make on their resumes?
I will chime in really briefly because I do a lot of resume reviewing, especially when someone is trying to enter into the tech workspace and they're trying to transfer their skills. So just because you worked at the gas station, let's not talk about the gas station. Let's talk about how you strategically did something, right? So for me, one of the biggest mistakes that I see all the time is people lack the know-how to transfer their skills into a tech role on their resume.
Yeah, that's a good one. Matthew, you got one?
Probably not optimizing for the applicant tracking system, ATS.
Okay.
Tell us, Jenny, we're dying to know.
I'm sure there's no wrong answers, right? So this is how this one article that I read answered the question. No clear objective, no results, only activities, which Dana, that's why I feel like your answer kind of leaned into that one is kind of that. And also, I think from speaking with you today, you definitely kind of say, I was working on this and this was the outcome, right? Like there was, you know, it was just like me working for the sake of working. There was something kind of coming on because of this. And the last one was too many words. And I hit the paywall. I couldn't read the rest. So I don't know the details about too many words, but I can imagine what that is. But the no clear objective was, okay, if you're just submitting your resume, you know, what are you trying to do? What are you trying to be? Like, it's way too ambiguous, you know, for someone that's coordinating or routing where this resume is going. If you've no objective, they really don't know what to do with you. And then, yeah, rewriting your bullet points as far at, you know, at each job, even at the gas station, right? If I did this, but, you know, there was some outcome, you know, based on my performance that was, that I was key in pushing. So I thought that was good article. And I know there's a lot of people out there, refining their resumes and looking for that perfect tech job. So keep these in mind.
Fun fact, I worked for a gas station, if you're ever in the Midwest. Actually, there's one in Texas. It's called Quick Trip. Check it out. But the things I learned from that, like the sense of urgency, customer service, project management. So every single day we had to come into work and we had this thing called the DAW, which stands for daily assigned work. And I would come in and I would organize it by color. And then, you know, you could just like do everything based on that color. Like everything outside is green. I'll do all the green things. So the all these skills and experience I learned for the 5 years working at Quick Trip, I'm so grateful for. So if you work at a gas station, you're pretty well off, more so.
Looking to expand your career? Work with brilliant minds, cutting edge science and AI, and a company voted best place to work and most loved workplace. Check out open positions with pros at www.pros.com/careers.
And you probably think, okay, my turn.
Yep.
Yes.
Dan, I'm glad you're here because I feel like this heat check is perfect for you. Okay. So my heat check is from TechCrunch. It's all about Reddit. So if you don't know Reddit's, I'm going to give you the first part of the headline. I'm going to give you the second part of the headline. So the first part of the headline is Reddit's planned IPO share price seems high. So Reddit is trying to raise some money, about $740 million. So they're targeting a valuation of about $6.5 billion, just depending on the source that you see. I've seen low from five up upwards to seven, but around $6.5 billion. And they're going to sell 22 million shares. And this is ranging from $31 to $34. Interesting part is they're actually opening up the ability to buy these shares. So not financial advice. I'll call that out real quick. So if you're a Redditor, like a power user, a moderator, they're offering the ability to like buy a share before they go fully public. I think that's really interesting because if you think about Reddit's kind of whole social media is they rely on users to moderate certain threads, Reddit kind of forum. So if I want to talk about the Chiefs, go Chiefs. I have a moderator that's specifically moderating any content that's on that Chiefs community, for example. So of course they kind of have, in essence, these moderators are somewhat kind of employees. So they're offering them the ability to buy the price before they go fully public. Now, the second part of the headline says, unless you look at its AI revenue. So I think it's really interesting. So maybe a year ago, however long ago that was, Reddit made their APIs not public anymore. And so any app that was using Reddit's API, they had to pay for it now. And at the time, there was a lot of backlash because, you know, Reddit's app was trash. And a lot of these other apps were much better with accessibility and whatnot. And now I think it's really interesting because I think I've connected the dots of why they made that API. This is all hearsay, right? So why they made that API private, and because there's a lot of the people that are investing. So one of the notable investors is OpenAI's CEO, Sam Altman. So it's really interesting because Reddit is this very, very big base of information and knowledge. And once you know, they go public, it becomes like a source of training data for AI. So there's a lot to unpack there, Dana. I'm curious, like from your standpoint, like if these AI companies are using Reddit's information to train, like what are the risks associated with that and maybe the pros and benefits for Reddit?
Yeah, I
put you on the spot, but thanks for being here.
I see. No, I think it's all about strategy, right? When you think about companies that are putting in these significant valuations for IPO, I mean, the reality is to create a demand for investors at the end of the day. So Reddit is no different, right? I remember Facebook hit the market. I'm like, hey, if they stay at $15, I'm going to buy some stock, right? But they hit the market. I think it was like 30 some bucks. And I'm like, okay, I'm out of the game, right? But ultimately, one thing that we didn't talk about today in the space of AI is these large language models. And in order to run these large language models, you absolutely need data. So data is king today, right? We think about ChatGPT is trained on every single data point, billions of data points, just off of everything that's on the internet, right? And so if you know, Reddit is trying to get in the AI landscape game. I mean, the data is what's profitable, right? So, but yeah, to the question of whether or not the Reddit data is being used to train models, if it's on the internet, it's a possibility that people are using it to solve whatever objective or use case or task that they're building their model to do, for example. But it is public data. I mean, when we talk about training these large language models, it is subject to bias. And we know Reddit to sometimes put out information that's not necessarily, you know, in the realm of bias, fairness, and things of that sort. So you know, you got to take this data with a grain of salt and make sure you sanitize it for the audience that you're looking to build a model and put it in them, you know, to use.
It'd be interesting to kind of follow in the news what Reddit going public is going to end up being like. And yeah, it's kind of interesting. I don't know. I don't know enough about it to kind of predict what will happen, but just that's an interesting one to see what will actually happen. Okay, my second heat check, because since Sierra's not here, I have a second one. So the University of Houston has a hackathon about once a year. And so they had one maybe a month ago by now, pro-sponsored it. And I was one of the judges. We had a really fun prompt that we challenged the students with. Basically, we asked them to incorporate a natural language AI to interact with a travel API. We didn't specify which one. Amadeus is one of the ones that was kind of suggested for them to plan a trip. So basically, you know, I could just kind of talk to this thing and just say, in general, I'd like to take my family on a trip, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, they, you know, call the API and it comes back and the results are also in natural language. So we really, I thought it was a really good prompt. I think the kids, I always say the kids, I feel so old, but they seem like kids to me. They're young people. They're young adults. I apologize for calling you guys kids. The young adults, the students that were at the hackathon, they did really well. Some of them had never like interacted with API. So you kind of feel like, hey, this is challenging you and getting you to know what it's like to work, because that's, you know, that's all we do all day is kind of like, oh, what's this API, blah, blah, blah. So that was fun. But then the second thing that we did, which I don't think we've done before, as far as I know, is our product leaders, AJ Damani and Sunil John, invited them to the office. They presented to the judges us after being up for 24 hours. Then we invited them to the office. They came last week to re-present with some, hopefully they all had a good night's sleep with that. And it was just really special to see them kind of refreshed and being able to present. Just very impressive the way these students represented are the top three that won the hackathon came back in. And so they were able to more people from the office could come in and, you know, ask the questions. It was good practice with them presenting, you know, in a professional setting. So it looked turned really nice. And I was really happy to see our leadership there interacting with the students.
What do you get out of participating in those hackathons? And then the other part of that is, what do you get out of seeing our product leadership participate in the hackathons, with inviting them back to the office, showing them, you know, this is where we were, blah, 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 and you know, letting them present?
Have you ever coached a team? Or I it's just so much fun to see students learn, or like when things click in, or I would never want to be a teacher. Like, that to me sounds terrible, like not the best thing for me. But I love seeing, I love movies where like people learn a skill and there's like a montage where they're like learning and stuff. So it's kind of like you're watching them, and a hackathon is such a short period of time that in the beginning you can see they're like, I have no idea. Like, I don't know how to do this. You know, I barely, you know, I just got this team together. You know, I'm a sophomore. I don't know what I'm doing, blah, blah, blah. And the questions that you get. And then, you know, they ask enough questions and they kind of are like, okay, I have a path forward. And then they present, and the creativity and the diversity of kind of ways that they answer that question is just to be just inspiring. I just like it. Just it gives me, it energizes me. I love seeing the students learn something. And then what I love about the executives inviting those students to the office is kind of what we talked about, is being present in your community. you know, so PROS is headquartered in Houston. This is the University of Houston doing something. And I think that partnership is something, and we've been doing, for as long as I can remember, PROS has been doing something with, you know, in some form or fashion with the computer science department at University of Houston. There's a lot of people that went to the University of Houston that ended up coming in as interns, getting hired on full time. And I think it's partially that thing is these students did something that was so impressive, and I just wanted more people to see it. And the fact that, you know, just seeing our product leadership be so interested. And they made time. Like, I wanted to go talk to them, to the students after, because there was like a mixer after they presented. And I had like 15 minutes before I had to get to my next meeting. And so I just wanted to be like, hey, good to see you again. But, you know, they were, AJ, Sunil, and Jeff Sweeney were all there kind of talking to them. And I was like, well, I don't want to interrupt because they're the leaders. I'm just going to, you know, I already met these students. I keep wanting to say kids, but they're students. They're young adults. So I don't know. It's the kind of thing that I just love to see. Do you do anything like that, Dana?
I do tons of stuff. Like I mentioned the Empower organization. I teach. And because think about it, right? These are the audience that this organization is serving is military veterans and their spouses and young adults between the ages of 18 and 20. So they don't have college degrees in tech field. So this is literally their opportunity to get this tech fundamental knowledge. And so part of that is they're so focused on getting their Google certifications and their project management certifications that they miss out on the end-to-end part of it. And so absolutely, I get my hands on dirty and I get in there and I give them an overview of project management. I give them an overview of artificial intelligence and machine learning and how that's the new thing of the future. So don't just get your Google certification and feel like that's it. No, there's that continuous learning piece. But to the hackathon point of view, every January I do the hackathon, actually it's February, but I do the Black Wings hackathon and I'm a judge. And so I know exactly the energy in the room. Like, it's so phenomenal that these students from different areas across the country, they blend, create teams, and they're acting like literally they got a job at a company and they don't know who they're going to work with, right? So just the energy in the room, the ability for them to kind of understand what this AI technology is doing from a natural language perspective. I know you mentioned that at the Houston Hackathon, but just diving in there and understanding what it is to build out these chatbots and pull in these libraries and these APIs and integrate it and create the design and actually build out these applications that integrate, right? The cool thing is my company, we also do quote unquote hackathons. We call them Innovation Summit. And every quarter we shut down for the day and it's a 24-hour quote unquote hackathon. And we show up the next day with all of these production ready ideas. Like literally the business can take it from there and put it in production. But I think the hackathons, we have to call out anybody that works with hackathons. We have to call out the innovation. It's about innovating. And it happens in a space where nobody's giving you requirements. It's just you build on what's already there or create and introduce an opportunity that people didn't even think of. And you'd be amazed at some of the ideas that come out. It's so phenomenal, right?
Yeah, you're right. It's about innovation because, yeah, if it was a problem that had a typical answer, then it wouldn't have been a hackathon and be like, well, we know what we're doing. We'll just, you know, build this feature like we would normally would. But yeah, creating a space where people can be creative in that way.
Exactly. Because we build to the business and the customer. Isn't it nice to take 24 hours and say what we think it's going to be exciting and new way for the customers, right? And one thing I have to say before I end my thought is people think innovating is what's happening in 2050. Innovation is also about taking an idea and making it better. Taking an idea and taking it to the next level. I mean, think about the innovation from, I'm going to date myself just slightly, but I didn't have a page, by the way. I didn't have a page. MySpace to Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, right? It's the same concept. You log in, get an ID, create your profile, and friend people, right? That's not anything new you're innovating around. It's about the experience that you're driving decade over decade that's allowing the traffic to build up, the exposure, the social aspect of it. It's all for social, right? It's all about the social growth, edification, experience, right? So, innovation isn't always about building something people have never seen before. I'm pretty sure when Steve Jobs decided to do the iPhone, even I was like, oh, he's crazy. That thing's too simple. It's too simple, right? But look where iPhone is today.
Well, thank you, Dana. Please tell us or tell our audience how they can get in touch with you.
I am, speaking of social, I'm not a social person, by the way. Like, you're not going to really find me with the Instagram, like, gig going on. But LinkedIn is my favorite platform. So if you navigate over to LinkedIn, Dana, D-A-N-A, Morrow, M-O-R-R-O-W, Brand, B-R-A-N-C-H, and you can connect with me from there.
Fantastic. And we can put that link in the show notes as well. And is there any other, do you have any other speaking events, or you mentioned the book that you're writing, anything else you want to shout out right now?
Yeah, the book that I'm writing, the funny thing is I don't see myself as an author writer, right? And so I actually have over 100 books written. They're across a few different genres. I actually have an AI discovery series. It's fully, my first book is fully illustrated, packaged up, ready to go. I just haven't published it. And then I have this other book, like I said, the career in technology to kind of tell my story and my journey to help others get unblocked and unstuck with their careers and navigating to the next level when you talk about that SVP title. That's the first book I want to see go to the market because I kind of see that as a representative of all of the mentoring and coaching that I do. And people are always asking me, what do you have that I can take away with me because you totally unblock me. But it'd be good to have a book to say, hey, refer to this, right? So as soon as it's out, I'll put it out on, I'll make sure you have it so you know you can share it with the community. But I'm also looking to get in with Grace Hopper again. I'm on my second time at Grace Hopper. I did Grace Hopper back in 2019 and last year. And so I set a goal for myself to be a three-peat like Michael Jordan. So got my submission going there. So hopefully it pans through. And just still on the speaker's trail to share my story with people who need to hear it.
Well, thank you so much and best of luck to all you have going on.
Thank
you for listening today. If you enjoyed this conversation, please share with your colleagues, friends, and family. Drop us a line at interfacepodcast@pros.com or find us on LinkedIn. Your feedback is important to keep the show valuable and relevant, so please rate and review us on whatever platform you are listening from. We encourage you to go out and continue this conversation and even start your own. We will meet you back here on the next episode. From our crew to you, have a good one.